You should try organic. What about becoming vegan? Don't eat any carbs. How about low carb? Paleo. Keto. Don't eat anything white. Don't forget about the dirty dozen. You eat too little. You eat too much. Don't forget to fast before you work out. I do intermittent fasting. Don't eat after 6 o'clock. Oh my God, sugar? Every day, I'm inundated with opinions. And you know what they say about opinions. Please, don't be foodish. Join me, Amy Goldsmith, owner of Kinder Nutrition and Wellness and dietitian for 20 years, as I talk evidence-based nutrition to get the disorder out of eating. I can't wait to serve you. Okay, hello everybody. We are so excited to talk about part two of our podcast from 2 weeks ago. I've got Kim Coppola here with me today. Hi, Kim.
Hey, Amy. I'm excited to continue this conversation.
Absolutely. So let's get right into it. Thank you for all of the feedback. We had lots of comments, more comments from this podcast than we have had from most. So I want to address one of the things Kim and I were just talking about was the comment that I received the most is that people did not feel like we discussed nepotism in the high school sports. And so, you know, I think we definitely didn't use that word. Maybe we did. I didn't listen back to the podcast. However, let's talk about it. So nepotism is when there is favoritism to a relative, basically. And it can be in any avenue. So it can be in sports, it can be in business, you know, anywhere. And so it would be a concern if you live in a school district where there are lots of parents who are coaches and they coach their own child. Now, the caveat to that is we have to think about this, right? I am sure that the employees who are coaching are probably not being paid what they're worth, right? Meaning the time. I mean, I always say take a look at what time you are putting into things and making sure that you're getting paid appropriately. So I do think there is probably difficulty getting the non, you know, school employees to basically volunteer their time. I don't think that they get paid. So just mm-hmm. putting that caveat in there, you know, this is kind of a touchy subject.
Mm-hmm. And Amy, I'm not as familiar, but are there rules depending on the school district or depending on the county or anything where you can't have a parent coach, let's say a high school team? Because I hear what you're saying about the availability and but I wasn't sure if there were actual rules saying like parents cannot coach on the high school baseball team, for example, if their child is playing.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you with the counties that we work with the most here in Frederick. So I would say for sure we work with FCPS, Montgomery County, Carroll County, and then Washington County. Those are probably the four that we work with mm-hmm. the most. Of all the patients we've seen, I do believe that there has been a parent for the majority.
Yeah.
So I'm unsure. I'm guessing that there's not a specific rule with that. But it's good that you brought that up because I was doing some research on that and I saw a really great kind of letter or opinion that was in CIT News and it was published in 2022 from Ketchikan, Alaska, which I probably said that incorrectly, addressing this. And the question was, you know, is the issue that we have parents who constantly complain, or is there a problem of nepotism in school sport programs? And as, you know, this was written, he said, maybe there needs to be a development of policy that address issues of nepotism, which was interesting.
Yeah. And I guess I think, you know, nepotism is a different kind of branch of favoritism. But I do think to a certain extent, you're going to face that in a lot of areas of life, right? Like, you know, somebody who knows somebody. So even if the coach isn't a parent, But if they're associated within the community in any kind of way, there could still be favoritism, because I don't know if people can be completely objective in their life experiences. So yeah, that's tough. Like, how do you address that? But then would you also have to address it in other avenues, like favoritism in other ways as well?
Yeah, that's interesting. You did bring up a good point, because there is, especially in a small community,
right,
it doesn't necessarily have to be a parent. And it's interesting. There's a great book. I've skimmed it. I haven't read every single piece of it, but it's called The Good Play Guide, from Amanda. And I think her last name is Gummer or Goomer, which I'm probably saying that incorrectly, who's a child psychologist and a parenting expert. And she talks about kind of how it's important for kids to know the difference between equity and equality. So equality is everyone gets the same amount of opportunities, right? Or equal opportunities. And equity is that different people get different allocations based on what they need, and life circumstances really dictate that. And so the point of that was that when you teach your kids or your children about equity, that teaches empathy. But the interesting thing, so I think that that's one of these things that, like, if you are dealing with nepotism, right, and somebody is getting favoritism and they're playing and not really because they are the best at what they're doing, or they're the person who should be, you know, on the clock. You know, I think that without even knowing it, there's kind of this subconscious thought from probably the parents who are watching the game and the kids. Okay, what is this? And it's interesting because studies show that reward centers in our brain are activated when we recognize fairness, even when it's someone else, which, I mean, I can say, I mean, I'm an Enneagram 8, so like I'm all about justice. I don't know, I was born that way. And I can tell I have a reaction when I know there's not fairness, right? When I see that there is fairness, even if it's completely removed from anything that I am like active in, I do feel very positive about that. Wow, this is such great modeling. I'm so happy to see this. And unfairness actually triggers the amygdala, and that controls fear and anger. So you can go into the fight or flight. So interesting when I think about how this all kind of rolls into each other.
That's interesting, because I also feel that fairness is such a big part of what drives me, but I think of it as being like out of control. Like, if things aren't fair, it's out of my control. And so that's interesting about how unfairness can also, you said it kind of signals like fear and anger.
Isn't that interesting?
Looks like I'm going to have to do some self-reflection after this podcast and what motivates me in life.
Well, it's interesting too, though, because you can see, if you think about like the young adult, right, who is playing sports, and, you know, if they are in a situation that they may view as unfair, right? Now it makes sense, like, why we may see more of that emotional reactiveness.
Right.
You know, so I thought that was really interesting to read.
And I also think when things feel unfair, we can often feel like hopeless or helpless, right? And then that can have a ripple effect on other emotions and like experiences, if we feel like, I guess, disempowered, right? That we don't have control over things and they won't change. So this is interesting to think about, like, fairness within sports. It's kind of a different perspective when looking at or any kind of extracurricular activities. Interesting.
Yeah. I do think that if you are in a district or a school where, you know, you are worried about nepotism, like, yeah, it's real. And I think that if your child is experiencing it, you know, if you are on a team and you see that the coach's, you know, daughter or son gets more playing time or isn't put in a position that may not fit their skill level, Now, remember, you have to be objective about that, right? So, I mean, it depends on the sport, but usually depending on the sport, you can kind of tell, you know, if they are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And everybody does have a bad day, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it can potentially really kind of bring down the morale of the team. And I think, you know, kids could kind of lose interest. Mm-hmm. So parents have a very important role. And I think you and I were talking earlier, right? If your child comes home and gives the example and says what's happening, the response really doesn't need to be, well, life isn't fair, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because your child is expressing that something about this situation doesn't feel right. And to just be told, well, life isn't fair, get over it. It's like, oh, where is the possible problem solving skills that is important for them to learn? Or where is the development of assertive communication in that? But yeah, being told, well, life isn't fair, just figure it out. It's like, it's such a teachable moment and a learning opportunity for children or high schoolers, right? And to just shut it down like that, it doesn't give the opportunity to like to teach them important life skills.
Right. And when you say things like that, I mean, you're not purposefully doing it or doing it maliciously, but you're essentially invalidating their feeling or their thought. And I think you and I, we know that that constant invalidation does lead to that, you know, negative mental health. Mm-hmm. You know, young adults feel like, well, is it even worth it for me to mention anything anyways, because I get shut down, or I'm mm-hmm. weird, or there's something wrong with me. And again, like when you have those negative thoughts, that does not feel safe to the nervous system, right? So mm-hmm. you're in that fight or flight and you have that negative, those negative thoughts over and over. And that's, I think, where we see that increased anxiety, that increased depression, mm-hmm. that are really persistent nowadays with the young, with this group of kids.
Right. And we talked last week about our job as parents to either protect our children or prepare them, you know, so mm-hmm. I could see where somebody makes the argument of, well, I'm preparing them for real life. Life isn't fair. Yes, there are many things in life that are not fair, but I think it's, again, you can prepare them for the reality of life not being fair without invalidating them. And I think that's where, okay, this may feel really unfair. You go into the problem solving, what's within their control in this situation, or you go into the development of communication skills and learning to be assertive. Mm-hmm. I often talk, Amy, with clients. I mean, I talk to them, probably I talk to someone about this every day, where we have a continuum of communication, right? So on one end, we have passive, on the other end, we have aggressive, and right in the middle is assertive. And people who are often passive, they kind of jump over the assertiveness and think that by standing up for themselves, it's going to be viewed as aggression, right? Well, I don't want to hurt their feelings, or they're going to get mad at me if I say anything. But really, Brené Brown talks about this. Aggression is like you puff up, passive is like you back down, and assertiveness is you just stand your ground. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, if adolescents are given the opportunity to practice assertive communication, they may become passive and then think that they're being aggressive with people when they're really not. Mm-hmm. And learning to be assertive and standing up for yourself is such an important skill that I even work on with adult clients that I have, is how to be assertive and stand up for yourself.
Well, absolutely. And it's funny, as you were saying that, I'm just thinking about, I have, you know, cause I have a 15-year-old and a 14-year-old, and I'm thinking about like all the sports that I've been on and all of the, you know, the gossiping or the complaints that I hear from the parents and the, you know, who are watching the games, and how little of them really actually understand how to be assertive, right? Mm-hmm. Most, I would say, are passive. And this mm-hmm. is just my experience. Most are passive. They're afraid of a confrontation or retaliation. And, you know me, Kim, I feel like fear of confrontation is absolute cop-out bullshit, right? I mean, mm-hmm. communicate. assuming that in mind reading that there's going to be a confrontation every single time that you speak up, it's just not true. And that word is often, I think, used incorrectly.
Right. And that's something that I talk with clients about, is like, being assertive isn't necessarily a confrontation. And yeah, I do think that word gets a bad rap because confrontation has this negative connotation, when really you can confront something, but just like by addressing it, you're confronting it.
Right. And then I do think you do see some parents who do get to that aggressive standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny. I think that there's a lot of people who look at that person and feel negative. I, just because of what we do, I usually automatically feel like sad for that person, because I know that for that person to have gotten to that point, there's been a lot of buildup, and, you know, that's their release point. So I'm not saying it is appropriate all the time, but I most certainly can understand it. So I like how you're talking about the assertiveness. Assertiveness lots of times can be a statement with no emotion. And like you said, standing your ground. And I know, you know, that makes a lot of people nervous, right? Like, I think I'm a pretty assertive person, I would say. And I think that the feedback that I've gotten my entire life is, well, I'm not really sure where you stand. And I think that that's after I'm assertive. And I think the question that I usually say is, well, I just told you where I stand. Do you think I have an ulterior motive because you've worked with people who are not assertive before? And most of the time they'll say, well, yeah, I mean, lots of times, like, it's, they, somebody says this, but they mean that. And I think that's the whole issue with this world, right? Like, you know, we could talk about that in a whole other podcast.
Yeah. I mean, Amy, the things you're saying, I just want to peel back all the layers to, right? Because yeah, like, people do, some people are manipulative, right? And they do have an ulterior motive in what they communicate. And that's a traumatic, right? Mm-hmm. So you do have, you know, people have to take into considerations ways in which they were raised, and, you know, their parents communicated with them. And yeah, was it very passive aggressive? And you had to decipher what parents really meant. Yeah, I feel like communication, I could just go into a whole, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then one other side piece to that, I think, is important to note, especially for women, right? We've often been taught in our society that you want to be likable, you want to be agreeable, you don't want to ruffle feathers. And then we have been taught to be passive, you know, from societal expectations. So it's even that much harder, I think, for women to learn the assertive communication skill. And I'm not saying that to disempower women of like, oh, you're passive. I'm saying it like, hey, if you identify as being a passive person, maybe here's an explanation of why, and it's within your control to try to work and learn how to be more assertive and like tolerate that discomfort in standing your ground. It is possible to become more assertive. I don't think you have to be disempowered if you identify as a passive person.
Yeah, I agree. And I think like that moves nicely into like the problem solving aspect of this, right? This player gap, nepotism, you know, the small teams where, you know, people are not, where there's lots of cuts, all those sorts of things. When we talk about assertiveness, it's kind of a neat thing. If you're listening to this, it may not sound neat, but to be a parent of somebody who's experiencing this, because you actually can kind of help your child practice being assertive. And I think that this is just my opinion. You can tell me if I'm wrong, Kim, but I think that the first step is, if your child is dealing with this, I think, you know, parents watch and listen, you know, watch the body language of the coaches, watch how they talk to the kids, watch and see, like, are they actually coaching like during a game or practice? And then listen to your child. So, you know, even if you think that they are being emotionally reactive, try not to validate and really listen to them. And I think the first step could be you know, I'm on your side. This sounds like it's a really hard experience. I think we should start with having you open up the communication, like to your coach, and, you know, talking to your child about being assertive and respectful, either in person or writing an email, and kind of initiating that problem solving step. What do you think about that?
Mm-hmm. I think that, when we focus on a problem, the problem gets bigger. And when we focus on a solution, the solution is what gets bigger and the problem gets smaller. Mm-hmm. And I will say that I learned that through reading the AA Big Book. So that's not, you know, my wisdom that I'm passing forward. But yeah, it makes a lot of sense. When we focus on a problem, we're just a hamster on a wheel. Okay, the problem. And there isn't this idea of like problem solving because we're so narrowly focused on the problem, which I'm not judging. Mm-hmm. That is for a reason, right? Because a problem can cause a lot of distress, and we may feel disempowered or out of our, you know, it's out of our control or helpless or hopeless. So I get why that is. But yeah, focusing on a problem just makes it bigger, and focusing on the solution is what makes the solution bigger and the problem smaller. And it also helps lower our distress because we're looking at aspects of the situation that are within our control. We mm-hmm. often get caught up on looking at things that are so far out of our control, but we don't always know that. You know, that's like mm-hmm. something I think in therapy, people really work to, they learn how to identify what is really within their control. So I think the sooner that adolescents can learn how to decipher that, focusing on the solution versus the problem, I think is going to be helpful in their long-term development.
Absolutely. And I feel like, you know, you can guide your child a little bit, you know, they tell you how they are feeling and you can say, hey, if I think that a great way to problem solve this would be, I was just talking to a client about this a couple of weeks ago, is to go up to the coach and say, this is how I'm feeling. I was wondering if I could get some direct feedback from you on this specific movement or from this specific game. You know, what types of metrics do you want me to work on? Is there anything that you think I could do to cross train? Because then you're kind of opening up a discussion where you can get feedback and they can also give you direct, you know, things to work on. Mm-hmm. I will say, and my client did this and was extremely successful with it and got positive feedback. I will say it was pretty darn scary for her to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, being assertive, right? And yeah, I want to normalize, you're confronting your coach and asking them, hey, what feedback do I have? That takes tremendous courage. I really applaud that client for doing that. That's pretty impressive. That's awesome.
I know. It was so impressive. I think the thing that made me sad was the worry about kind of the retaliation. And, mm-hmm. you know, my feedback to her was, hey, you are going to open up this discussion point. And how that adult responds says everything about them, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get to decide, which is also scary, like, is this the right person to mentor me, to coach me? You know, because then you're going to have this personal experience and you're allowed to have boundaries on, mm-hmm. you know, what your expectations are from your coaches and your, you know, and your mentors. So, mm-hmm. And I also shared, you know, if a coach or a teacher or a provider ever kind of puts someone who is asking for feedback like that into this like problem starter category, mm-hmm. I think it's more, again, that says everything about that person, right? Because it is mm-hmm. really, really brave to be able to have some self-reflection and communication, especially at that young of an age. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I think that somebody could trust that they're being genuine in their communication. Like, so if I went to you, Amy, do you have any feedback for this? Ultimately, I have to trust and know for myself that I wasn't trying to start any problems. I wasn't, right. you know, and like really be self-assured in that way of like, no, I can go to bed at night knowing that like I was just trying to be assertive and ask for feedback. I definitely think that's something to work with. If the interaction ever went worse than they expected, but I talk about this with clients every single day, typically these kinds of confrontations tend to go better than we think that they will. It's just our anxiety and mind reading that we think the worst case scenario is going to happen. And typically it doesn't.
Right. And I think it's because like, just like you said, it's really communication, not confrontation, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do we do when we have we're supporting our child, they go to the coach, and there is a, you know, something negative happens. So let's just say the coach, I think the biggest negative thing, and I know it's going to be surprising to people, but the most negative thing I think that can happen is no response. It's kind Ooh. Of. And I know that's weird, but I think if somebody like builds up the courage to kind of ask this and doesn't get a response, oh my gosh, could you imagine that?
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Then there's also, there could be, you know, quote unquote, like retaliation or judgment or something like that. And so let's just say there's a negative experience. How do we direct our child from there? Or what should we do?
Mm-hmm. Again, I think in every situation, you can always create a list of like, well, what's in my control? So mm-hmm. you reached out to the coach, let's say you didn't get anything. Okay, well, now what's in your control? Do you reach mm-hmm. out again? Is there another point of contact? You know, do you need to go with your child to talk to them directly, like face to face, if it was, you know, let's say like an email that went unresponded? That's a good question. I mean, I would look at what's in my control still. What about you?
Yeah. I think that every single thing that you just brought up is exactly what to look at, right? So I think if you emailed and they didn't respond, like something that I would tell like my client or my kid is, okay, email again. And you know, in the subject, like I always tell people to do the second requests. I mean, I do that with all the physicians that I try to reach out to, therapists, you know, whenever I'm collaborating, because I don't want to be ignorant to think that my email is the only one that gets to them. Do you know what I mean? So I would do that. And then, you know, I think that if you've got to kind of think about your kid, right? Like if your kid, if it took an enormous amount of courage for them to do that, and they sent the second email and they're still not getting that response, I think it's worth talking to your child about it. Hey, do you want me to go with you to talk to the coach? Or do you feel like since you already did what's requested, you know, communicate with that first avenue, do you feel like you want to go to the next avenue, which might be, who knows, like the athletic director or, you mm-hmm. know, depending on. And I would ask the kid, because I think I'm saying kid, but I mean young adult. I think that's what I see in my office so much. I hear people all the time, you know, teenagers are so difficult. You know what, guys, they have a ton of hormones and they're kind of moving into their own individual person. But I think the biggest mistake when you're working with teenagers is treating them like kids. I mean, they have opinions. They know what's fair. They know what's not fair. They know who deserves to play, who doesn't deserve to play. They know how disrupted their day is from this, you know, potentially unfair circumstance. Ask them, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? What do you think?
Good point. I mean, I'm thinking of clients that I've met with who have said, oh, well, I was upset about this. So then my parents went and talked to so-and-so and like, I was so embarrassed by that, or that's not what I wanted them to do. Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard because you want to be that person to guide them. And I think that's often confused with like making decisions for them and not right. I think this is changing, but I do think there is a discomfort in like collaborating with your child and being a team. It's kind mm-hmm. of like, no, I'm the parent, I'm the authoritative figure. You need to do what I say and listen to me. And again, I do think that's changing. But I think parents, I'm curious to hear, Amy, if parents have a reaction to like collaborating with their child in this decision-making process and problem solving together.
Oh yeah. And I think it's like, and you know, I have two teens. There has been times where I've witnessed something that I think is absolute, like complete bullshit, you know? And so you know, my kid will come, whether it's my daughter or my son, they'll come off the field and, you know, they'll get in the car and I'll say, you know, I always say, did you have fun? That's the first thing that I ask. I might say like, what did you think about this? And I will say there's many times that I had a reaction to something during the game. And both my kids are like, oh, who cares? Who cares about mm-hmm. it? Do you know what I mean? So I think as parents, we've been on this earth a little bit longer and we've had different circumstances. So I feel like sometimes we're more judgmental or kind of get a little bit more worried or angrier quicker than kids mm-hmm. do, because remember, these young adults, they still trust everybody. They haven't had they trust most people. They haven't had all the experience.
They trust have, everyone. Right? You know what Big I mean? Mistake.
right. But I don't know. I do. I like that idea of collaborating with your kid.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah. Because the way you shared that story, it's like, are you projecting your own life experiences right. onto your children that, oh no, you shouldn't be okay with that, when really right. like, are we letting them assess it themselves and come up mm-hmm. with their own conclusion on how it made them feel or think? Are we like, oh no, that's not okay. Or right. you should feel some type of way about it. And like, now that creates a ripple effect of like, oh wait, and not learning to trust themselves too.
Right. You know? Right.
Huh.
Because again, I think, yeah, I mean, you know, teens are my favorite group to work with. I really enjoy them. And I'm surprised. I still like working with them, even though I have two teens and I really like yeah. the teenage years of my kids. They're a lot more resilient than I think a lot of adults kind of take into consideration. So I think, you know, allowing your kid to kind of problem solve and kind of work with them and guide, that's a big thing. I do think it gets tricky though, when we kind of take the adults in, you know, into consideration. I think that with my experience, I think the most negative thing is complaining and gossiping from a bunch of adults who do nothing about it. And I mean, Kim, you know how I feel about this, right? I mean, what do we call them?
Help seeking complainers. Yes.
You know, I feel like you can't hide behind one or two people and expect them to solve all the problems and have the same adult, you know, kind of communicate. And, you know, if you are in a school district where you feel like nepotism is a big issue and all the parents are talking about it and gossiping about it, then potentially something does need to be done from a communication perspective. But the gossiping and all that kind of stuff, it's not going to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I volunteered as the team mom for the football team last year. It was kind of like a pleasant experience, but I saw it there. It was, you know, a bunch of parents who don't hold their kids accountable to communicate, right? Mm-hmm. And then have expectations and complain about like pointless stuff. They have no idea what goes into a practice or a game or things like that. So I think when you have a situation where you have parents constantly like that, right? And you're not problem solving, mm-hmm. you are poisoning the experience for the kids, even if you don't know it. Because what happens is, and this is what happened in, you know, in my situation, is then the coach, you know, says, well, we only want these specific parents working here and these specific parents working there, and we don't allow this parent here. So, you know, you may not believe that that's happening, but I can tell you 100% it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, it's hard though, because you talk about expectations, and I often talk about that with people too. Like, you have to be very explicit with your expectations because people can't read your mind. And we right. often confuse, you know, if we're in like a partnership of any kind, right? Like, oh, well, if they really love me, they would know that I want them to do this. Like, no, reading somebody's mind is not an indicator of how much they love you or care about you. Right. I wish my husband could read my mind. That would be pretty awesome. But right, we have to be very explicit in our expectations and we have to be explicit in our communications. But at the same time, like, this is a really difficult skill. Can we expect other parents? Do you know what I mean? Like, just because it's our norm to be assertive and to, you know, communicate in that way, is it a realistic expectation that other parents do it though too? Or is it about having conversations with them to see if they can get on board and like communicate as a group? That's tough because everybody has their own communication style.
It's tough. And I think, again, it's, you know, something else that is driven by fear, because with my experience, I think the majority of parents are quiet and on the sideline and don't say anything because they're fearful of retaliation. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that holds them back for standing up for, you know, what the right thing is, because they don't want their child to be retaliated against. And I mean, I can appreciate it. Right. And mm-hmm. it happens. My kid has been retaliated against for sure. You know, in this school district. So I feel like, you know, it's a tricky thing.
It is,
you know, and a lot of parents don't feel like it's worth it, because depending on where you are, like if the school has, like consistent nepotism, or, you know, there's issues with like the coaching style, or there are people who are elected to be coaches who don't have the experience, and it's over and over, it is completely natural as an adult to say, like, this is a battle I'm not willing to fight, because nothing will change, because there's an allowable behavior all the way to the top, just like a corporation. Mm-hmm. So I get it. It's hard. I can see it both ways.
Mm-hmm. And then even in that situation, right? Okay. Like, if it goes all the way to the top, but there are still going to be things, we might have to get kind of creative with what's within somebody's control, but there still are things within somebody's control. Is it metering your expectations? Is it putting your investing time and energy in like something else? Yeah, what's within your control? Is it how you think about the situation and like you learning and growing from that experience? Like, that's what's in your control, is using that as something that, to build your resiliency, you know, that ability to like fall down and learn how to get back up.
Well, and you just hit the nail on the head, I think, because if you're collaborating with your young adult and you're having those conversations and you're listening and you're seeing like things, and yes, I do feel like you're retaliated here, or yes, your coach gave you awesome feedback, now it's in your hands to see if you're going to do the work that they expect. You can then have that conversation, you know, is this where you want to be, and is this experience worth it? And mm-hmm. I think when your child makes that decision, you need to let them move through it, right? So this is mm-hmm. my big thing. I have seen and witnessed negative experiences, and I have watched kids, and I've had lots of clients too, who have kind of spoke up and not received what they needed, and they were brave enough to walk away. And I mm-hmm. will say that again, brave enough to walk away, right? Mm-hmm. Now, some of those clients who were brave enough to walk away had parents who then called me to kind of discuss the situation, because they did not want their kid to walk away. They wanted them to stick with it. And I think, parents, if you're listening right now, if your child was brave enough to advocate for themselves, brave enough to kind of move through the motions and still decide that it's not suiting them anymore, you need to be brave enough as a parent to let them move through that and honor their, trust them and honor their resiliency, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if they leave and they sit in their room and they isolate themselves, okay, that's one experience, right? Mm-hmm. Or that's one situation. But if they're willing to do that to find something else that gives them joy, applaud it and allow it, parents. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that is something that you need to do.
Yeah, I think that if parents are having an emotional response to their child being independent, really, and making mm-hmm. an independent decision for themselves, it's normal to like have thoughts and feelings about it as a parent, right? We want to try to guide them the best that we can, but we also have to do that delicate dance of like taking a step back, giving up some of the control and allowing children to make their own decisions. So I think if parents are having an emotional response to that, like acknowledge it and sit with it so you can guide them from a place of objectivity, right? Mm-hmm. And think about like our own interactions with our parents, what, right? Like what really sticks out is sometimes when parents react really emotionally and it unintentionally causes shame or guilt in the decisions that we make. I mean, this is tough. Like parenting is, you know, no joke, but if you're able to be as objective as possible, I think it's going to be helpful.
Absolutely.
You're not putting your shit on your kids.
Right. That's what it all comes down to, right?
Right. Trying to put the least amount of shit on our children and traumatize them the least amount, and knowing that we are still going to traumatize them to some extent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you, Kim, for talking about this. I know that sometimes we have topics that we talk about and it's hard to kind of tie the dots. I think we wanted to bring this up because we have a ton of athletes who come to us first to seek sports nutrition. And then as we kind of peel the onion, the layer of the onions, we do see that this is more eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And we do see that sometimes that initial trigger is from their experience with high school sports. So we're not saying that it's always the experience, but we want to put this information out there. So as parents and friends and teachers and providers, we can support our kids so that they can be more resilient and, you know, have a better experience. So thank you for all of your insight, Kim.
Of course, Amy.
And this is, I'm sad to say, this is our last podcast before our summer break. So we are going to be taking a break and we are going to be back in September. So if you are listening to this and you have some topics that you'd like us to discuss, some feedback, anything like that, reach out to us and we will be excited to see you all in the fall.
Hey, awesome. See you guys.
See everybody later.
Thank you everyone for joining us for our favorite hour of the day. We hope you enjoyed our latest podcast from Don't Be Foodish, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode. If you enjoy our podcast, please help us by rating and reviewing. This allows others who have similar interests to find us. We'd also love for you to follow us, and when you do that, you will be getting the episodes before they are broadcasted on our social media. If you have something that you are really interested in hearing or you'd like us to talk about, please feel free to give us a call at 301-580-0008. We will listen to your messages and hopefully be able to integrate that subject into one of our podcasts this year. Thanks so much, and we'll talk with you soon.